Did you know that every major diaper company either financially or vocally supports abortion? If that appalls you, and you're looking to support a baby brand that aligns with your pro-life, pro-family views, then Every Life is your solution. Every Life firmly believes that regardless of where someone is from, what they look like, or whether they were planned or unplanned, every baby is a miracle from God worthy of love, protection, and celebration. Every Life offers high-performing, supremely soft, premium diapers and wipes delivered right to your doorstep. Their diapers are crafted without fragrances, dyes, lotions, latex, parabens, or phthalates. And you can feel good knowing that every purchase with Every Life contributes to changing lives through their support of pro-life organizations and pregnancy resource centers. Every Life is not just changing diapers, they're changing lives. Visit everylife.com to learn more. That's everylife.com. And don't forget to use promo code Duffy10 for an exclusive 10% discount on your first order today.
Hey everyone, welcome to From the Kitchen Table. I'm Sean Duffy along with my co-host, my wife, my partner in life, Rachel Campos Duffy.
It's so great to be back here at our kitchen table. We have a lot of really hot topics. This is going to be a hot topic show. So we're going to talk about Joe Biden's war on women and families in the form of these appliance regulations that are really going to put women back like pre-50s in terms of
back
household
in the
chores.
Ages.
I know, horrible. So we're going to talk about that war on women and appliances in your home by Joe Biden. We're also going to talk about this new trend of intergenerational living that's being caused by the Biden economy, the good and the bad about that. But let's start with this, because you spotted this article in the Spectator, the American Spectator, Sean, and it was talking about all the different celebrities that are kind of finding religion, if you will, in terms of, well, I should say cracks in their woke religion. So Woody Harrelson was on Saturday Night Live the other day, and at the end of his, you know, monologue in the beginning of the show, listen to what he said.
So the movie goes like this. The biggest drug cartels in the world get together and buy up all the media and all the politicians and force all the people in the world to stay locked in their homes. And people can only come out if they take the cartel's drugs and keep taking them over and over. I threw the script away. I mean, who is going to believe that crazy idea? Being forced to do drugs? I do that voluntarily all day long.
Okay, so the crowd and the SNL crowd was a little nervous. They didn't know what to do. I listened to Woody Harrelson and I thought, is he channeling me? That's how I feel. But I think you probably think this is where left and right come together.
I don't think politics are a straight line. It actually is a circle. And you see this meeting of left and right at the back end of the circle. Woody Harrelson, who again is by no stretch a conservative, is coming out. And by the way, this is comedy is so important. Mockery is so important, which is why the left has tried to kill comedy and kill mockery. What he says is hilarious and really kind of true. And what's happened during the COVID lockdowns and the forcing of vaccines and the fact that Big Pharma has bought off politicians through their ad dollars. They bought off media and they're forcing everyone to take drugs. And if you don't, they're locking you in your home and they're taking your job away. And so that Woody lays it out so clearly and with such humor, I'm like, wow, maybe there is some hope for America.
Yeah, it was really great. By the way, I just read an article yesterday that Pfizer just bought this other company, this other medical company for like a gazillion dollars. I don't know how many billions of dollars. But that company deals with myocarditis and like drugs for heart stuff. So it's like they create the problem, then they buy another company to create a drug to solve the problem from their drugs. But anyway, yeah, I mean, you see, you've always had for decades, the left has been very suspicious of Big Pharma. And it was this weird thing that happened during COVID where suddenly, you know, all the people on MSNBC were like basically shills for pharma. And it was a lot of conservatives that were like, what's going on here? Like, why are they forcing me to take this? What's in it? Why were there no long-term studies? Why are we giving it to kids when they don't need it? You know, it was all this weird stuff that was going on. But you and I both knew hardcore, sincere good liberals, many of them in your family, Sean, who were just thinking the same thing we were thinking through COVID.
Well, or these are the organic broccoli buyers, right? The people who buy
kale
food. They're like, maybe I don't want to put that in my body. But I'm kind of saying that I had an evolution when I was in Congress. My viewpoint was, listen, I want drug companies to make enough money to invest in the next generation of life-saving drugs. And if we socialize the drugs they have in the market and they can't make a profit, you're not going to get an investment in the next generation of drugs because they're not going to do it, which I still believe that. The problem, though, after COVID and kind of after we've done some podcasts on this, there's almost a cottage industry of making people sick.
Yeah.
And then pharma is able to step in and help with the sickness that government and pharma helped instigate in society and in culture. And they get filthy rich. We get sicker. And I'm like, well, maybe we should step back and go, how do we keep people healthy? And maybe by during COVID, maybe if you exercise.
Right. I mean, obesity was an absolute, they knew it early on when we were still on lockdown. They understood that people who were heavier and had all those comorbidities from being obese and being overweight and didn't have a healthy lifestyle, that they were the ones succumbing to it. And yet there was no like campaign to get out and get healthy. In fact, they were shutting down gyms. I mean, the whole thing made no sense. They were barring us from taking
medication. They shut down swing sets like playgrounds for kids.
I have a picture from in Wausau, Wisconsin, of a playground with like crime scene tape around it. And this was happening in rural Wisconsin. You can imagine what it was like in New York. So that was Woody Harrelson talking about that. Here is Tim Robbins commenting on the cruelty of so much of the enforced COVID enforcement on the left. Listen. He's on Russell Brand's show,
Lisa,
by the way.
Unless this conversation really broadens out and allows a little polarity and allows a little bit of mud in, but we're going to end up somewhere sort of sanitary but very ugly.
This is a new religion. This is acting like a religion.
Yeah.
It's dogmatic. It's absolute. It's if you do not believe in it, you are condemned to hell. It's, you know, maybe this is a new religion.
Yeah, do you think that it's being posed as politics, but it's behaving like a religion?
Seems like it. It seems like it has some of those aspects, at least. I think it's worth thinking about.
I read the article, and we don't have the clip here, but Tim Robbins talks about, I think it might have been in London or New York, I forget where, but what he said was he was listening to news reports and said there's all these white supremacist MAGA supporters who are down at this rally.
Like it was an anti-COVID lockdown or anti-mask rally or something like that.
Anti-vaccine. There was a rally to push back against the government policies on COVID. He went down to watch the animals in the zoo, all these MAGA Republicans and white supremacists. And Tim Robbins went down and he was like, these aren't white supremacists. These are like my people. These are like Birkenstock wearing, just freedom loving people of all different stripes that are protesting their government. And he had an awakening that said, listen, maybe what the government is telling me,
or what the media is telling
me, is all wrong, because I just saw with my own eyes something different than what they were telling me. And it led him to this point on Russell Brand show, who is also very vocal and also a big liberal, coming out and saying, hey, listen, what we've done and how we've got this religiosity around COVID and its policies and the vaccines, you know, maybe we need to, you know, push back on this.
Yeah. You know what I like about Russell Brand is his thing is, let's all just live the way we want to live. If you want to live in a more traditional lifestyle and you want to have these set of views, go for it. And I'm going to have this other set of views. But what Tim Robbins is talking about is this dogmatic thing that's happening on the left, where not only do they want to live the way they want to live, but they want you to live the way they want to live. And they want to make sure that you're going to get canceled. Your career's going to be stunted. You're going to lose income. You're going to be a social pariah if you don't go along with what they want. And that is why you hear conversations all the time, and people don't like to talk about it. But on the right, lots of people are talking about, should we have a civil, not war-based, just a friendly divorce here? Because sometimes it just feels, for conservatives, that they're never going to let us be. They're never going to let us live the way that we want to live. They're always going to find a way not just to punish us professionally, financially, socially, et cetera, but they're going to keep trying to separate our kids from us. They're going to keep wanting our kids using our government schools, using all these institutions of our culture, whether it's, you know, sports and Hollywood, to indoctrinate our kids and make sure they get them and not us. It's a serious thing.
We have to use their words. We have to abide by their rules. You make an important point or distinction, which is there are liberals and there are leftists.
Yeah,
and
that's great.
These Tim Robbins, Woody Harrelson, even John Stewart and Russell Brand, these are traditional liberals.
Yeah,
and liberals historically believe in speech. They believe in freedom. And again, there's a lot of things that I disagree with liberals on, but liberalism has a meeting at the backside with conservatism on basic principles right. of governance and how societies should function and how we should debate and come up with resolutions to disagreements. The leftist is the one that even these liberals are pushing back on to go, we don't force people to take vaccines. We don't force right. people to use certain language. We don't want to force children away from their parents. We don't want to use schools to indoctrinate children. We should actually educate right. children there. And I think that's the split you're seeing. These old
This is the split within the Democrat Party.
The leftists and the liberals.
Yeah, you're saying. And it used to be not very long ago, maybe pre-COVID, that the left or the Hollywood was very solidly on the side of the leftists. But here are a few cracks. Now, this article in The Spectator brought up another person. I'm a little questionable on this one. The other celebrity he brings up, this is, by the way, an article by Daniel Flynn in The American Spectator. It's called Hollywood's Biggest Lefties Are Airing Second Thoughts. And he's right about that. There are a few who are airing some other thoughts. One of them is Sean Penn. And he says that, you know, Sean Penn mocked DEI officers saying that, you know, this was a big investment in the hunting of witches, that he ridiculed the pronoun police. He was on a podcast with Bill Maher. And he said, I identify as a hot dog bun who wants to own bathrooms. So sort of mocking how silly it was. And he did say that. But in this article, Daniel Flynn says that Sean Penn said that socialism has never worked. Now, I looked everywhere. Both you and I scoured the internet because I have a beef with Sean Penn. Sean knows this. I've had a beef with Sean Penn. And Danny Glover and Michael Moore and everyone who appeased Hugo Chavez's socialist revolution in Venezuela that basically plunged the most prosperous country in Latin America into extreme poverty, the poorest nation in Latin America right now, where people are eating their own, you know, pets to survive. They're eating pets from the animals from the zoo. They're, you know, people who were upward middle class are now digging through trash. You know, so many of them are coming through our borders right now.
They're selling their bodies through prostitution.
Women are moms forced into prostitution on the Colombian side of the border because they can't feed their children. They can't even find the groceries. So crazy stuff happening. Sean Penn was a cheerleader of Hugo Chavez for so long. In fact, he was so mad that there were American journalists who dared to call Hugo Chavez a dictator that he said that he wanted them to be arrested. He wanted American journalists who called Hugo Chavez a dictator to be arrested. So now, if it's true what Daniel Flynn is saying, that now Sean Penn has said socialism doesn't work, this is really like Fox breaking news kind of stuff. I haven't seen it. I haven't seen the clip. I can't say that it's happened. But Daniel Flynn says that it does. I'll tell you, when you talk about Sean, this shift in what liberals used to be and what conservatives are now, you're seeing a lot of flip-flopping. So it used to be that they were the party of peace, right? They were the party that, you know, no war, Cindy Sheehan. They were against the Iraq war, against the Afghanistan war. Now Sean Penn, for example, is advocating at this moment, pressuring Joe Biden to give F-16s to Ukraine. More bombs to Ukraine. More planes to Ukraine. He wants this war to continue. He wants us to fund it despite the degradation that's going on in our own country. He met Zelensky in person and had this really bizarre kind of embarrassing thing where he handed his Oscar to Zelensky. And now he's made a documentary about Zelensky that has just been released. So he thinks Zelensky is like the George Washington of, Europe. And that's an odd thing. Cause like, again, now I've turned into a peacenik, Sean. So against this war. I think it's stupid.
Dick Cheney and Sean Penn.
Yes.
Same philosophy on foreign policy. How the world changes. But you know what? I'm actually okay when we shake up these political lines.
Me too.
And it fosters debate. And again, when we can get liberals and conservatives to come together on basic principles, our country is better off for it. And that's how you shut down these leftist, socialist, communists, is when some common sense comes back into play from both sides of the political aisle. And I'm happy about that. Again, I'm with you. I'm not sure. I didn't see the video clip yet of Sean Penn talking about socialism.
I have to see. I'm like St. Thomas here. I have to believe. I'm the doubting Thomas Rachel. Here. I got to see it to believe. Or as Reagan would say, verify.
Trust but verify.
I don't know if I trust Daniel Flynn on this because, boy, was he a cheerleader for social. Sean Penn was a cheerleader for social. And really quick, Sean, before we go on to our next topic, do you think that, these are huge stars. I mean, Sean Penn, Woody Harrelson, Tim Robbins, these are A-list stars. Do you think, and there's others, you're seeing Bill Maher coming in, mm-hmm. you're seeing, Jon Stewart feeling vindicated about being mocked by liberals when he said, it's the Wuhan lab that does, coronavirus, research. You sure you don't think it leaked from there? Do you feel like that these cracks are enough to do what you said, which is not necessarily that suddenly Hollywood's going to become, conservative, but that we're going to have this truth revealed and people questioning their own, not just their own ideologies and ideas, but questioning their government, questioning their bureaucrats like Fauci.
I hate to be a Debbie Downer, but I think the left has so embedded in every institution in society. Again, it's the military, it's Hollywood, it's media,
sports,
it's schools, it's sport, it's everywhere. Is it possible? Yes. Is it probable? No. And if it's going to be possible, it's not going to be stars like this. It's going to be moms, and this is my mantra. It's going to be moms and dads who raise good kids. If you want to save America, save your family. Raise a good next generation. And that takes a lot of heart. It takes a lot of effort because society and culture is in overdrive trying to indoctrinate your children, and to not let that happen, it's a real effort on your part, whether you take your kids out of school or you have to rewire them when they come home for dinner.
Yeah, you have to like deprogram them from school.
So I got a little glimmer of hope, but the light bulb isn't on yet for me.
I will push back a little bit. Of course, you and I are never going to disagree on the fact that the most important thing you can do as an American who wants freedom and liberty and all those things in our country, the most important thing you can do is raise the next generations. Concentrate on what you can control, which is your family, your home.
Yeah.
That's the most important thing that you can do. However, I do think that when you have big stars who do have a lot of sort of cultural capital scratching their heads and saying, hey, because there are a lot of people who went along with the government stuff because there were celebrities saying, out there, on TikTok talking about how they were going to, take the vaccine and people should, one of the things that upset Tim Robbins was how cruel he saw so many of his fellow woke celebrities be during the COVID thing, that they actually were saying things like, if somebody didn't get the vaccine, refused to take the vaccine, they should not be allowed in a hospital bed. If there's a shortage of beds,
given life-saving treatment.
Yeah, they shouldn't be given. We should prioritize people who, follow the mandates of COVID. So I think that there is an important component. There is an important role that big celebrities can play. And if you get enough of them turning, and Bill Maher said on that podcast that he had with Sean Penn, he said, I have a lot of celebrity friends that quietly tell me they agree with me 100%. But the environment in Hollywood is such that it's still there. It's very censorious. If you step out of line, you won't get a job. And so big celebrities have the power to do that. If a Tom Cruise or super A-list person said it, it could actually have an impact.
But Joe Rogan is no conservative. No. He's actually a Democrat. He's a liberal, but has come to common sense. And so to your point, these old school Hollywood stars, they can give courage to other young stars to actually speak out and join them in this effort. But their careers may be halted or
it's easier to speak out if you're Sylvester Stallone and you already made your money, right? So it's harder.
We'll have more of this conversation after this.
Did you know that every major diaper company either financially or vocally supports abortion? If that appalls you and you're looking to support a baby brand that aligns with your pro-life, pro-family views, then Every Life is your solution. Every Life firmly believes that regardless of where someone is from, what they look like, or whether they were planned or unplanned, every baby is a miracle from God worthy of love, protection, and celebration. Every Life offers high-performing, supremely soft, premium diapers and wipes delivered right to your doorstep. Their diapers are crafted without fragrances, dyes, lotions, latex, parabens, or phthalates. And you can feel good knowing that every purchase with Every Life contributes to changing lives through their support of pro-life organizations and pregnancy resource centers. Every Life is not just changing diapers, they're changing lives. Visit everylife.com to learn more. That's everylife.com. And don't forget to use promo code Duffy10 for an exclusive 10% discount on your first order today.
So I'm going to talk about this next topic, Sean, which is the war on women. Remember when you were running?
The war on washing machines and women. Joe Biden hates washing machines and women.
He does. So you and I have been talking about dishwashers
for a long time.
It seems like it's a big topic in our marriage.
It is.
So one of the first things we did when we got a little bit of extra money, was like when we renovated our kitchen, I said, Sean, I don't care what happens in this kitchen, we are getting two dishwashers. You cannot have 9 kids and not have 2 dishwashers.
And I said, we can't afford a second dishwasher.
And like, I literally was like, I'm sorry, this is one of these non-negotiables. I'm getting two dishwashers, so
here's what she did. She actually, we got one dishwasher, and then she had a big gaping hole with the other one.
Yeah, until he bought the next one.
And about 4 months later, I'm like, fine, we'll get a second dishwasher.
Yeah,
which we had
gone over budget on that kitchen, and
which, by the way,
he was trying to hold the line, but it just was not going to happen.
I love the second dishwasher. She was right. We should have got it early on because we have a lot of kids.
Yeah.
There's a lot of dishes.
But the problem with the dishwasher, Sean, is that the new dishwashers do not work. And you literally have to run because of these stupid climate change, what do they call them? Efficiency standards.
So they have new water standards, how much water can be used in a dishwasher and how much electricity can be used in a dishwasher. And so when you cut the electricity and you cut the water, it doesn't wash your dishes, which is really frustrating.
So what do you do when the dishes aren't clean? You run it again. How efficient? That doesn't sound like you're saving the environment.
Not at all. And so, just in our kitchen right now, this is not the one that we had the debate on the two dishwashers.
Yeah. When we moved into this, it had two dishwashers.
There's two dishwashers.
Thank God.
And they're old. And they're like on their last leg, they're limping along.
And I won't change them.
And I'm like, let's get a new dishwasher. And Rachel's like, no.
Do you know why?
We're going to keep the old school dishwashers because I don't want Joe Biden's.
I don't want energy efficient dishwashers because I want dishwashers that actually work. So the two dishwashers here, they're not perfect. They're clearly an older technology. But they actually wash the dishes and they pump out water. And I know that if I, and so now what's happening is
anyone who does dishes understands the dishwasher debate. And so now Joe Biden has,
he wants to make it worse,
to the next step. He's like, I need to attack washing machines. And again, we have 9 kids, 2 of us. There's a lot of laundry. Yeah. You can't have a washing machine that doesn't work. Listen, if you have 2 people in your home, you can't have a washing machine that doesn't work. We have 9. We can't have machines that don't work. And so what Joe Biden has done is said, listen, we need new efficiency standards for washing machines. So I'm going to, again, reduce the electrical use
Green New Deal
of the dishwasher.
Stuff.
I'm going to make sure the washing machines uses less water because we have a global climate crisis on our hands, and washing machines are part of the problem of the global climate change, and the world's going to end in 12 years. And so even Whirlpool, who makes a lot of washing machines, has come out and said, here's the deal. It's going to take longer. The soap that you're going to use in the washing machine is going to cost you more, and your clothes are going to be less clean.
Yeah.
So basically, these machines won't work, but Joe Biden's crusade against moms and washing machines here is going to make your washing machines.
Wash too, Sean.
They do. Well, I do wash, but
he doesn't not like as much the way I wash his clothes. So he does his own. He's kind of picky about it. So it's the industry says it's going to cost them $700 million. So here we are in the middle of a recession where American industry and manufacturers are not doing as well as they used to under Donald Trump. And so he's going to make them, he's going to force them to do this conversion. It's going to be worse for the American manufacturers. It's going to be worse for those of us who use these appliances. And here's the deal. The appliances, if you look at the history of women and freedom, it is the female freedom and appliances have always been sort of connected, right? When appliances started entering into the home, it made, you know, especially the washing machine. I mean, when people used to have to wash by hand, that took up so much of a woman's time. At that time, women were the only ones doing it, or for the most part. And so when washing machines came, it freed up women to do other things, to enjoy life in a different way and not be so tied down to so many of these household chores. So I'm wondering, what is he up to? I don't think it's just a war on women, because as we mentioned, men also wash clothes. But it's a war on big families as well. I mean, the laundry is a big deal. I was watching The Five the other day, and Kayleigh McEnany was on, and they had some discussion about washing machines. It wasn't this discussion, but she said, I do a lot. I have kids. I do a lot of laundry. No one does more laundry than me, except for probably Rachel Campos Duffy, which is true. And so that's a big part of my life. Please don't mess with that, government. Please leave my washing machines alone. Please turn my dishwashers back into efficient things that I don't have to run twice, because, or worse, the kids just put them away and then I grab a glass and it's dirty.
Can I channel Joe Biden for a second?
Yes.
Hey, folks, the washing machine is going to cost more. It's going to cost more money too. It's not going to work and it's going to cost more. I'm whispering like Joe does.
Right.
It's going to cost more money. So it doesn't work, and you have to pay more for the washing machine.
That's
right. But that's not all they've done. So, right, dishwashers, washing machines, they now want to take away our gas stoves,
yes,
right?
And they floated that. They're trying to say they didn't mean it. They floated that. They intend to do that. And they're already building homes with no gas lines in them. Lots of cities already say you can't put a gas line in. So
the functionality of a home works. Has anyone bought a new water-efficient toilet? They don't flush.
Yeah, it's terrible.
The toilets don't flush. And so whatever happened to a big bowl of water that, you know, comes down and swoosh, yes, you don't use water and the toilet doesn't work either. So toilets, dishwashers, washing machines, and gas stoves, these guys are crazy. And again, as we just talked about earlier, they want to impose their stupid regulations to make us buy stupid products that don't work. This is not advancement. We're going back to the dark ages policies.
It's a war on modern life.
Yes.
It is a war on modern life. And what makes, I mean, listen, there's a lot of things about modern living that aren't so great. There's a lot of us that have nostalgia for a different time. But one of the wonderful things about modern life is the efficiency of our life in terms of appliances and technology and the way it frees our time up to do other things. And they want to take us backwards. You know, one of the things I hated, you know, I grew up in Europe because of my dad's job. My dad was in the military. And when you live in another country, whether it was Peru or Spain, I always remember meeting these women who were from these countries who always just like were envious of American washing machines. They, you know, they would have endless conversations with my mom about American washing machines. Until you see a tiny, inefficient European or South American washing machine, you don't appreciate how, you know, wonderful it is to have a big old Whirlpool that you can put a giant load of towels in and they come out clean and then you dump that whole thing into the dryer and they dry. I guess Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she only has her and her fiance to clean for, and he has only her to clean for. So maybe they don't, you know, they don't care. But as soon as you start to have more people in your household, it becomes a problem.
So so we're complaining about these products in the home that the liberals are attacking. But I guess I do have some features in life that work for me. Like when I turn on my lights, the lights actually go on, whether I was in New Jersey or in Wisconsin. But if I was in California, we're talking about these necessities. They flip the light switch on, and oftentimes the power is not there. The lights don't go on. So
yeah, they've rolling blackouts.
We're going back to the dark ages with these liberal policies. And again, the real culprit, if you care about global warming, is China. So focus on China. We're into a podcast in the future on cobalt and electric vehicles and how devastating it is for the environment and how it pollutes and how liberals don't want to see that. We're not going to do that today, but we're also going to talk about
how all that global warming, the human rights abuses, the child labor, slave labor in the Congo that is involved in so many of these so-called green technologies.
Tim Robbins said it's a religion. And he was talking about COVID, but this is a religion for the left.
Yeah,
there's no common sense around any of the policies that they promote. And it would be nice to go, you know what? There is a balance between water use, electrical use, and functionality. And I'm going to balance all three of those. The primary function, though, is functionality of these machines.
Thank you. That's right. The primary function is functionality.
If I have to reduce water and it doesn't function, we're not going to make these new mandates. But by the way, what Joe Biden giveth by the pen, Donald Trump or Ron DeSantis can taketh with the pen. You can roll some of these policies
back. But it's hard on these companies. I mean, like, they're making, you know, great washing machines that we all want to buy. And then Joe Biden comes in and now they have to reconfigure. Like I said, it's cost hundreds of millions of dollars to meet these new standards that don't even, I mean, and then President Trump or Ron DeSantis come in and then they put him back. I mean, this is the kind of uncertainty that is killing American manufacturing.
I like to take a shower when I get, like, I want to get bruised by how fast and powerful the water comes out.
Oh, you're a terrorist. You're an environmental terrorist.
I really am. And now they have these new standards where they have these water moderators inside your spouts that'll regulate how much water comes out. So you get these little drips now of water coming as opposed to the powerful stream that I love.
Oh, I know. We all love that.
They ruin modern life. Stop it. Leave me alone, Joe.
I guarantee
you that
shower that you're talking about, that delicious shower with the full force, everyone in Hollywood has it.
I'm sure
it's being adjusted for those of us in the middle of
the
country.
They have private jets and showers that work.
Yes.
We get bikes and showers that give you a little stream.
We'll have more of this conversation after this.
Okay, so when you have, we're talking about how hard it is to, you know, keep a house together when you have a lot of kids. Well, now American families, we're seeing this huge increase in intergenerational living because this economy. So it's very interesting. A record 60 million Americans are now living in multi-generational households because of the Joe Biden economy. So what they mean by that is that, you know, young family with, you know, one or two kids saying, we can't make ends meet, say, in California. We're going to move back to Iowa where our parents are. We're going to move in with them, save money. Mom and dad save money because, by the way, the elderly are also getting crunched. What they thought they were going to retire on just isn't making it with the inflation. So it's kind of a win-win. Now, obviously, there's going to be a lot of adjustments and so forth. But great article in the Daily Mail tracking this new trend of intergenerational living, which I think, Sean, is a plus and a minus. So it's a minus because it's terrible that we're, you know, dealing with this economy. And I think in many ways, it feels like the way they are in Europe, right? Isn't that how they live in Europe?
Yeah, these socialist economies, when young people can't move out of the home because they can't afford to move out of the home.
They
never leave, right? And they might get married and they move back into the bedroom that they grew up in. And maybe they have their kid in the bedroom that they grew up in with their wife.
Or maybe they don't get married. Maybe, for a lot of people, it stops them from moving on to that next phase.
It does. And it's a sign that America's getting poorer. that what's happened with the Joe Biden economy, with these liberal policies, with massive printing, borrowing, and spending, the devaluation of our currency, which gives us inflation, paying people to now stay at home, all of these things coming together with rules and regulations, the attack on energy, has made it more difficult for the young person, which back in our generation, you wanted to leave your parents' home. You want to go start a life on your own. That was freedom. And now you have this whole generation of people who are like, I don't have the same freedom that my parents had to leave the home and start my life on my own. And I think, to your point, it is a very bad sign for this generation and for the future of America if we go by way of Europe, who, by the way, this is the way they live. It's intergenerationally, but not by choice. It's by forced economics.
Yeah, but I do see a little bit of a silver lining. Yeah. So here's the perfect situation for me, because my parents don't live near me, and I wish they did. During the year, they will sometimes spend 2 or 3 months with us and live in our home, which I love. But the ideal situation for me, and it's hard because we live in an area that's cold. My parents live in Arizona, and they love the warm weather. So that's the weather has always been an issue for us of where to live, because my parents cannot handle living in cold weather. And so when they come to stay with us, it's usually in the summer. Or the spring. And so, but in any case, and they leave like snowbirds. As soon as the leaves start to fly, they're like, bye, we're in Arizona.
We're out of here.
But there is something beautiful about families that live intergeneration. It doesn't have to necessarily be in the house. Maybe they just live on the same street. And so they kind of help each other out. This is the way families have always operated. I know we've depended a lot on my parents, who've been so helpful to us as we've raised our kids. They've helped us out. If you and I went on vacation, we would take the kids there. They always wanted the kids to stay with them for, you know, big chunks of time in the summer. That's always been really helpful for us. But maybe there is a silver lining here, that so many American families have lived bifurcated, you know, like mom and dad are on one end of the coast and the others are on the other, and the kids are over there. And maybe it's time, maybe this is a time for people, even if they come together because of the economy, maybe that couple eventually moves out of their parents' house, but just instead of going back to California, maybe they just move down the street.
Yeah. So my own family, there's 11 of us in my family.
I love that about your family.
And a majority of my brothers and sisters have moved back to Hayward, Wisconsin. They don't live with my mom and dad, but they live like in a 1.5 mile radius of where my parents live, and they can go over to their house. They go out for coffee. They go out for dinner. There's a social component, a family component of everyone living really close to each other. Now, are there problems with that when families live really close together? Of course there are. But do the benefits far outweigh the drawbacks?
Yes.
Of course. And so I think what happened, Rachel, is during the pandemic, a lot of families were forced to spend a lot more time together that they weren't spending. And a lot of families said, I actually like you people.
Yes.
We should do this more often. Yeah. We should spend more time together. And I think they saw in their hearts they were missing something that's really important to them, which is family time. And whether it was their immediate family or their extended family, that realization happened. And by the way, some families were like, we don't really like each other, and they got divorced. But a lot of families like that time together. And again, I think that's healthy. But I think it has to be by choice. If it's like we have economic freedom, but we want to be together. We want to be in the same neighborhood.
But maybe this is what forced it to, like you said, with COVID. For example, in our situation, Sean, we were the opposite. Remember, during COVID, there were all these grandparents that never saw their kids, and they were so sad, and they were all FaceTiming. Like, we did the opposite. When lockdown happened, my parents were like, we're sick of living in this condo in Scottsdale, where everyone's, you know, freaking out about COVID, all these old people freaking out about COVID. And they're like, we just miss our grandkids. We miss you guys. We don't want to be on lockdown. So they actually came, and we did what you weren't supposed to do, which was live with elderly people and little kids. But we did it, and it worked out fine because we had already had COVID. So we had all the natural immunities. My parents came and lived with us. And it was great. They lived with us for like a month or two. And what happened is exactly what you said. We were like, hey, we really like having you guys here. And they were like, I don't know if they liked it as much as we did, but they really missed their grandkids. And so ever since then, they actually come and spend a month to 4 months with us in a year. And I think it's wonderful. There are so many things that our kids get from my parents that they can't get from us. There's a patience. There's an attention to little details, because I've got so many things running around in my mind all the time. And when my mom sits down with Valentina and she's feeding Valentina, I promise you, there's nothing else going on up there except feeding Valentina. And that's a really special moment that I find it hard for me to do, because I usually have a lot of things going on at one time. And so I'm feeding Valentina, but I'm thinking about that I got to empty the dishwasher. I'm thinking about what I'm going to make for dinner for everybody else.
What article am I supposed to read?
What am I supposed to read? Yeah. So there's a lot going on. There's a slower pace watching my dad, you know, play pool with our son, or watching our other son go outside with my dad as he, you know, checks out something that's going on outside. There's just something about having that intergenerational thing that you lose that wisdom, that patience, that other thing that kids get.
So, but I think for a lot of people, like even our situation, it doesn't work right now to have intergenerational living. But what we've done is tried to carve out times where they go, we can take a month, maybe 3 months, and we'll come and stay with you. And then we're going to leave. We're going to go back to the warm weather. But also, we have a small little cabin in Hayward where we went for the pandemic. And by the way, we recognized we were blessed. We still had jobs. There's a lot of families who lost their jobs, and it was really challenging. That wasn't our situation. So we were able to work, but go to the small cabin up in Hayward. And we spent a lot of time together. And since that time, we've tried to recreate those moments of being together, because listen, as human beings, our families are the center point oftentimes of our lives. And to build that, to grow it, to strengthen the bonds is so critical. And again, I think for so many, as horrible as COVID was, there has been an awakening of the family through COVID.
I agree with
and
that.
And the time that we spent. And again, if we're looking for silver linings, that's one that I don't give Anthony Fauci credit for anything, but maybe I'll give just a tidbit of credit for helping strengthen the American family, Anthony.
I do think people are chasing that feeling they had, that reconnection that they had during COVID. And I talked to so many people, like, I feel guilty saying it, but COVID was actually great for my family in terms of the family bonds and reconnecting and understanding what was really important. It forced everybody to slow down. Now, it had terrible consequences for children and their education. It had terrible consequences for so many small businesses that didn't survive the lockdowns. But there was this reprioritization. And also, I think,
It takes planning, though. So even now in our lives, our daughter is 23. She's married. Our kids are getting older. We still have little ones in diapers from Valentina. We've got a 6-year-old and a 9-year-old, but we got ones that are out of the house as well. And even now we sit and talk about it and think about, we would like our family to be by us. And where will that place be?
Yeah, we talk about this a lot.
Where are we going to go? Where do we have a base that we can recongregate, or give them a future vision of where we all want to be? Because we would like our kids around us. But if you don't put thought into it, and it may never happen, but if you don't think
it better happen,
it never will happen.
And yeah. So where do you, so I always think, where do we want to live that our kids would want to live too? So in this next phase, you know, I don't see myself living where I'm at right now forever. I know there's going to be another stop for me. And I want to make sure that that next place that I move to is a place that's warm and that my kids want to live near that as well, so that we can all kind of be together. Because I really do believe in intergenerational living. I do think what your parents have in that little town in northern Wisconsin is amazing, to have all those children around. I think it's a little too cold.
I love Wisconsin. I know. I've been there for
it's too
years.
Cold in the winter up north. But I would like to do it in a warm place where all my kids can be around me. And that's something I think people
are
thinking about.
It's a conversation. We put thought into it. And I think that's important for all families. If you want that, if you want to create that, again, you got to think about it, and you got to think about it early enough.
Yes.
And so we're trying to recreate it. And again, I know this, you know, the COVID wasn't perfect for everyone. This economy is not perfect for everyone. And sometimes there's a lot of negativeness that happens, but this is a positive. This is a positive that can come from these situations. And it comes back to family and strengthening of the family and the relationships. And there's a lot of assistance that happens back and forth between intergenerational living, yeah, which is really powerful for that family unit.
Yeah, they talk about this young couple was like, wow, we can never afford to go on date nights because we couldn't afford babysitters in California. One of the couples was saying that. Another one, you know, the elderly, you know, parents love having the help of the husband, of the son-in-law. So there's a lot of help that can happen in those kinds of arrangements. You know, the mom's getting help, the grandmas get help getting to the doctor and all this kind of stuff. So it's interesting. It'll be 60 million Americans now living in multi-generational households. It will be interesting to follow them maybe 5, 10, 15 years from now. How did that work out? I have a feeling it's going to work out really well.
I do too.
So
listen, if you like our podcast, this rapid fire couple topics this morning, please subscribe to our podcast, rate, review us. We like that you join us a couple times every week. Listen, thanks for joining us on the podcast. We enjoy this time with all of you and each other at our kitchen table. But until next time, have a good day.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com.